Hi, everybody. Welcome to English Digest. I'm Stephanie.
And I'm Tom.
Hey, we're on our history unit, which means we're talking about history. I love history. I think that was one of my favorite classes in school. Love to learn about what happened long ago. And we're actually talking about a fun time in history called Medieval Europe. Everything happened in Europe before it expanded, you know, to America and the North America region. Now, everything was going on in Europe and, of course, Asia. But back then, they had something called a feudal system. They had kings. They had knights who would wear that really heavy silver armor. I've always wondered how they walked around in that. It looked very uncomfortable. You can see lots of armor if you go to old museums. I was just in Scotland a couple of months ago, and they had armor set up that you could take a look at. They didn't look very tall, though. The armor was quite small. But the knights would fight, and then we had the lowest class where the peasants, a lot of them were farmers, but some were merchants. They would buy and sell things. So we're talking about that. It's day two. We learned about that system, the feudal system, but we also learned that the Christian church had a lot of power back then. And if we're talking about the beginning of the medieval Europe, we actually only had the Catholic Church. There were no other Christian groups. It took a while for other divisions, we call them sects, S-E-C-T, other divisions of the Christian church, to leave the Catholic Church and set up their own church. So we're primarily talking about the Catholics at this point in history. Today we're going to do something different. We're going to talk more about the art, the literature, and what we have left over from people who wrote poetry and stories about that time.
Yeah, especially the music there. I like to listen to medieval music.
Really?
Yes, indeed. You can find some of it. You've sung it before?
Of course I have.
Okay,
sure.
Okay, that's not going to work with me because I tend to like instrumental music, like with the lute and the crumb horn and the shawm and stuff like that, some ancient instruments.
Uh-huh.
But yes, that's part of the art of the Middle Ages, and of course they have other things like architecture and painting and performance and all sorts of stuff. So that's mainly what we're going to learn about today. So let's get to it, everybody. Let's read through the entire contents of today's lesson, and we'll be right back to talk about it.
We know a great deal about the Middle Ages from the historians and other writers who lived during the period. However, in public consciousness, most ideas about the time have come from literature and art. Writers such as Sir Thomas Malory and Chrétien de Troyes wrote about King Arthur and his Knights of the Round Table, who upheld the rules of chivalry. Later writers such as Sir Walter Scott added to our perceptions of the period with novels like Ivanhoe. The Middle Ages also served as the most popular inspiration for fantasy literature. Though these works involve dragons, magic, and other imaginary concepts, the technology, social order, and other elements of the period frequently supply more realistic details of the world in which the stories take place. The most notable modern example of this is George R.R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire series, which inspired the hit TV show Game of Thrones. The show has especially helped put knights and other archetypes of medieval life back in the public eye. The Middle Ages were brought to an end by technological and cultural developments. The former include the spinning wheel, which tripled cloth production, and gunpowder. The latter saw a philosophical movement away from faith and toward reason. Sailors began to explore the globe, coming into contact with the civilizations of Asia and the Americas. Though the medieval era is long past, its architecture remains. Huge and impressive castles dot the European landscape, along with beautiful churches and cathedrals. These and the facts mentioned above ensure that the days of knights and the world they lived in will never fade from memory.
We shall now discuss the contents of today's lesson, ladies and gentlemen. Are you ready? Then let's get to it. So, again, we're talking about medieval Europe. It's more than just kings and castles. And in today's lesson, it begins by saying, we know a great deal about the Middle Ages from the historians and other writers who lived during the period. Thank goodness there were people living at the time who are writing about the time of the Middle Ages. Historians, of course, did research about history, and they published books about history and the things they found. We've got other writers as well, probably people who wrote poetry and fiction and stuff like that. And those manuscripts, those books have survived until the present time. Not all of them, of course, but some of them have come to us through time. And we can read those things and learn about life during the Middle Ages.
We sure can. Thank goodness we have people who wrote down what was, you know, going on during these different periods of history. It says here, however, in public consciousness, most ideas about the time have come from literature and art. Boy, isn't that the truth. Literature would be things that have been written, and art could include not just music that we were talking about earlier, but the paintings that we still have. I love to look at the artwork from that period of time. Now, if you're talking about something being in the public consciousness, it just means people being aware of something, you know, something that they've heard about or they've seen, and people are talking about it. So if it's in your consciousness, you're aware of it. So a lot of the public today know about the Middle Ages because of literature, books they've read, art they've looked at, seen, or maybe music they've listened to, but also some of the TV shows that are currently very popular these days. I know one TV show we're going to be talking about that is about this period of time is Game of Thrones. So that is some literature we're going to be talking about. Now, usually when we use this word literature, though, guys, we're talking about not comic books, no, or, you know, just romance novels, no. Literature is usually a word we use for written work that is considered to last for a long time. It's been around for a long time. It could be classic literature. So it's really a superior type of writing we're talking about. Not just anything that people can publish and, you know, you read it for a few years and then it's out of the public's mind. Literature is usually writing that has been around for years and years because it's excellent.
Right, okay, so of course it's all part of the public consciousness nowadays. Mm-hmm. If we read literature and art, literature, you could say literature, that's a correct pronunciation as well. But yes, most of our ideas about this period of history comes from literature and art. And writers such as Sir Thomas Malory and Chrétien de Troyes, did I say that right?
Chrétien. De Troyes.
Okay,
yeah,
I don't speak French, but in any case, these particular writers, among others, wrote about King Arthur and his Knights of the Round Table. The Knights of the Round Table, you may have heard of them from a Monty Python movie where the Knights of the Round Table, we dance whenever we're able.
Or the musical Camelot, as well as the movie Camelot.
Right, right.
Yeah, of course.
Camelot. Yeah, the Knights of the Round Table, there, of course, have been many movies depicting King Arthur. I think Excalibur from the 80s was a big movie about the Knights of the Round Table.
Well, not just King Arthur, who's great, but he's older. The sexy, hot guy was Sir Lancelot. That's why we watched that.
Yep, Sir Lancelot, Sir Galahad, Sir Robin. There were sorts of different Knights of the Round Table. And these people upheld the rules of chivalry, or at least in these works of literature, they were talking about the rules of chivalry. If you uphold something, you maintain those things. So, of course, they had rules of chivalry, or a code of chivalry, what you're supposed to do, how you're supposed to conduct yourself. yourself what is good, what is bad, what is good, what is evil, etc. So they continued the tradition of chivalry, and later writers such as Sir Walter Scott added to our perceptions of the period with novels like Ivanhoe. I've heard of that, I've never read it before, but evidently it was written by Sir Walter Scott, I think in the 1800s, much after the medieval period, but this particular writer was writing about that time, and when people read this book, they get an idea about what life was like during that time.
Yeah, Sir Walter Scott actually published it, it looks like 1819, 1820, but he was writing about history. His book was set back in the Middle Ages, so it gave people an idea of what life might have been like back then, kind of cool. We're going to focus more, though, I think, on some literature that's more popular today. So let's move on to the next paragraph. It says the Middle Ages also serve as the most popular inspiration for fantasy literature. Fantasy literature would include things that don't exist in real life, like dragons, and things that can fly, like people. Fantasy would also include things like Harry Potter. That's fantasy, because they have magic in them. And that's actually quite popular these days. So, though these works involve dragons, magic, and other imaginary concepts, the technology, social order, and other elements of the period frequently supply more realistic details of the world in which the stories take place. So, even though we've got fantasy literature that has make-believe things like magic and dragons, the way that people lived back then and maybe the social order, the class system, it looks more like what really happened in the Middle Ages. So it takes a little bit of, you know, make-believe fantasy elements and they put that in with what really life was like back in the Middle Ages. And that is what a lot of people are looking at or reading these days in some of the books, series that are out there.
I'm kind of thinking about the Lord of the Rings trilogy that kind of seems like it could take place in medieval times, although it does say specifically that it takes place in a time way before our current modern era in, you know, another time. But still, to me, it seems like it's kind of medieval in feeling, etc. And it's kind of fantasy literature with dragons and elves and hobbits and stuff like that. But yes, indeed, we've got some modern books that are dealing with these concepts as well, these imaginary concepts. But still, some of the realistic details of the world are still there. The most notable modern example of this is George R.R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire series, which inspired the TV show, the hit TV show, Game of Thrones. Maybe you've heard about it. I don't know how popular it is here in Taiwan, but I know it is very popular in Western countries. We have some friends here, of course, in Taiwan who read those books and watch the TV show and are addicted to it. There are hundreds of different characters that you've got to know about, and it's a big obsession with a lot of people. It's Game of Thrones. But in any case, this is a modern example, and we're calling it a notable example. Notable means it's something that you need to take note of. It's something that you need to notice. So it's a big example, a noticeable example, a significant example, an important example.
We skipped over this word realistic. We should probably talk about what that means.
Okay.
If you have a fantasy TV show that has realistic elements or details, it means alongside those things that are make-believe, like dragons and magic, you have realistic elements or details, things that are happening that are true to life. So if it's realistic, it represents things in a way that is accurate and true to life, even though those things happened long, long ago, hundreds of years ago. 'Cause the Game of Thrones is set back, gosh, it's got to be at least like the 1300s, 1400s. Maybe not even the 1400s, maybe earlier. I'm not someone who's watched the Game of Thrones, but as Tom said, we have a friend who actually read all the books before the TV show came on. The TV show, I know, is still going, and it's still very popular. So you'll see things that are part imaginary, people that have, you know, thought up these interesting kind of crazy things. But you'll also see realistic elements where these stories supposedly take place. We're going to talk more about that, guys, but right now we're going to take a quick break and listen to our Chinese teacher.
大家好，欢迎收听 English Digest， 我是 Jessie。我们今天要阅读的文章是 Unit 6的第二天课程。首先，我们看到第一段的第一句 ：We know a great deal about the Middle Ages from the historians and other writers who lived during the period。我们从生活在这段期间的历史学家和其他作家了解到很多关于中世纪的大小事。A great deal 是大量、很多的意思。其后可以接 of， 再接不可数名词，就相当于 a good deal of， a large amount of， 都是接不可数名词。例如， the businessman made a great deal of money by investing in the stock market， 这名商人借由投资股市而赚到很多钱。另外要注意的是，如果是用 a large number of， 则是要搭配复数名词。例如，A large number of celebrities showed up at Joe's birthday party. 很多名人出现在乔的生日派对上。我们接着看到第一段的第二句。However, in public consciousness, most ideas about the time have come from literature and art. 然而，在公众意识中，关于中世纪的大多数概念是来自文学和艺术。名词 consciousness有意识、知觉的意思。Lose consciousness 就是指失去意识。Regain 或 recover consciousness 就是指恢复意识。例如 ,After hitting her head, Jane lost consciousness and never regained it. 在珍伤到她的头部之后，珍失去了意识，再也没恢复。另外 ,consciousness 的形容词为 conscious,Be conscious of something 就是指意识到、察觉到。例如 ,In recent years, more and more people have been conscious of the seriousness of climate change. 近年来越来越多人意识到气候变迁的严重性。我们接着看到文章第二段的第二句里有一个形容词 ,imaginary, 意思是想象的、虚构的。A dragon is an imaginary animal in both East and West. 龙是东西方皆有的虚构动物。要注意的是，和 imaginary 相关的形容词有 imaginative, I-M-A-G-I-N-A-T-I-V-E, 意思是有想象力的。例如 ,Tom is not an imaginative person, and his ideas often lack originality.汤姆不是个有想象力的人，他的想法通常缺乏创意。另一个相关的形容词是 imaginable, I-M-A-G-I-N-A-B-L-E, 意思是可想象得到的。例如 ,Ben does everything imaginable to try and make Amelia happy, but she doesn't appreciate him at all.班尽一切可能想要让艾米莉亚开心，但他根本不感激她。另外，第二段的第二句里有一个片语 take place， 有发生、举行的意思。使用这个片语时要注意，主词必须是事物，不可以是人。而且 take place 不可用于被动语态。例如 ，The graduation ceremony will take place next Friday.毕业典礼将在下星期五举行。这句就相当于 The graduation ceremony will be held next Friday.
We're going to take a quick break. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Okay, so let's continue talking about how we look at the Middle Ages through literature and art. And we've been talking specifically about literature here. Some of these works of literature are kind of fantastical, I suppose. They deal with fantasy literature, with dragons, magic, and other imaginary concepts. And a notable example is George R.R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire, which, of course, has later become the TV show Game of Thrones. Maybe you've heard of it. Maybe you're a fan. And the show has especially helped put knights and other archetypes of medieval life back in the public eye. So in this sentence, we have this verb phrase, to put something back someplace. This show has especially helped put knights and other archetypes of medieval life back into the public eye. It has brought those things back. This show has brought back knights. It's brought back other aspects of medieval life back to the public, back for us to see in real life. So again, we're kind of learning about the Middle Ages through this show. Now, in this sentence, we've got the word archetype, which is kind of similar to the word I just used, kind of aspects of medieval life, sort of examples of medieval life, and we're seeing them through this show.
Yeah, archetypes were just examples of certain types of people, too. Sometimes you'd have the hero, he's an archetype, the villain, the bad guy, he's an archetype, who represent all of that type. So kind of fun. So the Middle Ages were brought to an end. Why did they come to an end? Why did they stop? We had some inventions that changed life for everyone. And of course, they were technological inventions, which just means they were part of technology and culture, which also was changing over time as well. What was the technology? Well, someone was really smart, and they invented the spinning wheel. This was before we had factories that would weave cloth. We had huge machines that would make cloth. That would happen later in the 1800s. Before that, we had the spinning wheel. Those are really cool. If you haven't seen one, look that up. It made cloth faster than they had made it before, which was a huge invention. It tripled cloth production. If you triple something, it just means instead of making 100 of something, you make 300. You make a lot more of the same thing. Also, gunpowder was invented, and I think gunpowder was invented in Asia, China, perhaps. Yep. Gunpowder, they had no guns before this time, and so when they would fight in these battles and wars, they would have to stab each other. You'd have to get very close to kill someone. And then gunpowder changed everything because it changed the way people fought wars. That was huge.
It was huge. So, again, we've got the spinning wheel and gunpowder. Those are advances in technology. But we've also got some cultural developments, and that's the latter thing mentioned in that sentence. Technological and cultural developments. So the former was technological, and the latter in that sentence was about cultural developments, and the latter, the second thing mentioned in that sentence, saw a philosophical movement away from faith and toward reason. Sometimes they refer to this as the age of reason. It's a philosophical movement. Philosophical, of course, has to do with philosophy, where you got these really smart guys who spend their lives in libraries talking about the meaning of life and why we're here and stuff like that, like Plato and Socrates and Mengzi, etc., etc. Those are all philosophers. In Europe, though, this was a movement, a way people were thinking to get away from faith. Faith always usually refers to religion. Do you have a faith in God? And they were thinking, yes, you can have faith in God, but there's also science and reason. We're doing experiments that the Bible doesn't really talk about. So we're learning things about astronomy and about medicine and stuff like that. So that was more about the cultural developments in the Middle Ages.
And sailors began to explore the globe. They got into those big, big boats, those big ships, and sailed the seven seas. They came into contact with other civilizations, one being Asia. Before that, people just didn't travel much, right? Yeah, they didn't go very far. So a civilization, guys, includes a society, its culture, its way of life in a particular area. So At one point, Europe was coming into contact with Asia and the civilizations there, and also the Americas, not just North America, but South America as well. So, though the medieval era is long past, its architecture remains, which I love. And the architecture, of course, would include those great castles, that you can go and see in Europe. They're some of my favorite places to go visit. They're made out of huge stones. And if you go inside on a hot summer, it's still pretty cool inside because that thick rock keeps out the sun. So that's some of the architecture we're talking about, some of the buildings. Also, of course, some of the churches are still there. I actually saw a building in Scotland that was built in 1100.
Ooh.
And it's still there. It's amazing. Yeah.
Wow. So, yes, in Europe, of course, you can see that kind of stuff. Castles all over the place. Of course, they've got churches because the church, the Roman Catholic Church, was so influential in the past. And a really big Catholic church is a cathedral. So you could go check those out. They're huge. They've got cathedrals in, say, the Vatican City and Paris and all sorts of places. And these and the facts mentioned above ensure that the days of knights and the world they lived in will never fade from memory. So, yes, we've got these castles, churches, cathedrals, maybe some other buildings that are still standing, and then the history, the facts that were mentioned in the article above. All these things together will make sure, they will guarantee, they will ensure that the days of knights and the world they lived in, the days of feudalism and of royalty and of the king on a throne and the peasants, all those things will always be in our memory. They won't fade from memory. And here we've got the word fade as a verb that just usually means that something gradually grows faint and it slowly disappears. Sometimes you have an old photo on the wall and it will fade. The colors will fade. They will no longer be as bright and colorful. You won't really be able to see the picture after a while. It will fade.
Or your jeans. The more you wash a pair of jeans, the lighter blue they go, right? So you start out with a darker color, and then over time, the color becomes lighter and lighter. It fades. My memory fades quickly. I forget lots of things very quickly. Someone who is going to do a little bit more explanation on this is going to be our Chinese teacher. Let's listen right now.
我们接着看到最后一段的第一句。The Middle Ages were brought to an end by technological and cultural developments. 中世纪因为技术和文化的发展而结束。这句有个片语 bring 或 put something to an end, 意思就是结束或终止某事物。例如 The ceasefire agreement brought the war to an end. 停战协议结束了这场战争。另外如果我们说 something come to an end, 就是指某事物结束了。例如 ,the party didn't come to an end until midnight. 那场派对直到半夜才结束。我们接着看到最后一段的第二和三句。The former 是用来指前者 ,the latter 是用来指后者。在拼 latter 这个字时要小心是两个 T 而不是一个 T。Later, L-A-T-E-R, 是稍后的意思。例如 ,see you later, 待会见。我们用 the former 和 the latter 来举一个例子。Mark has two sons, Roy and Paul. The former became a surgeon, while the latter became an actor. 马克有两个儿子,罗伊和保罗。前者成为一名外科医生,后者成为一名演员。以上就是今天的课程，谢谢大家收听。
That's all the time we have for today, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us, and please join us again next time for another edition of our program. From all of us here at English Digest, I'm Tom.
I'm Stephanie.
Goodbye.
Bye.